Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
I'll never forget, I had a nurse whose husband was a doctor, but he had been unfaithful to his wife.
Dr. Randy Schrader on Focus on the Family Minute, talking about one couple he counseled.
And I remember her saying to me, she said, "Dr. Schrader, I'm a nurse, blood doesn't bother me." She said, "But what I did is pictured myself filled with sin, and then I pictured myself touching the cross of Jesus, and a drop of blood from his forehead where the crown of thorns was on his head came down and hit my hand and turn me righteous and holy. So I need forgiveness, just like my husband." And then I pictured my husband saying to me, "I'm so sorry I hurt you by being unfaithful. Will you please forgive me?" And I said, "Sometimes it's going to need to be. With God's help, I'm working at forgiving you." Again, it's a process.
More from Dr. Randy Schrader at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
When you need a plumber, chances are you need one right away. That's why Red's On-Time Plumbing is available 24/7 with same-day service. Red's On-Time Plumbing has a 5-star rating on Google. Get a great plumber and quick. If you're planning a project, Red's has convenient online booking and always gives free estimates. Ask about a $1,000 SoCal rebate on high-efficiency tankless water heaters. Schedule now at ontimeplumbingpro.com or call Red's On-Time Plumbing at 805-466-6188.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now the rest of the story. I have here before me a photograph of a bearded old man. He is slouching in a lawn chair beside a backyard trellis. His hands are draped in his lap as though they had been placed there by somebody else. He is peering uncomfortably into the camera through half-closed eyes. I don't know the date of this photograph, although most certainly it was taken early in this century. And yet who, upon observing this rather remarkable portrait, might imagine another portrait of this same man when he was younger? A daguerreotype that was never taken but should have been. A picture perhaps a half century precedent of a young soldier standing on a hill preparing to make the decision of his life. This is the rest of the story. Bill Miller was a captain in the Union Army during the conflict that Confederates would remember as the Uncivil War. In the summer of 1863, Captain Miller's squadron was deployed along the edge of a tract of trees called Lott's Woods. Now, reserve troops is what they were, and they were waiting there, almost hiding, with orders as firm as any Union boys had ever received. "Do not join in any fighting," they had been commanded. "Do not attack anyone under any circumstances." "Wait," they had been told, "for further orders." And the officer was expected to keep that reserve squadron static. And the officer was Captain Bill Miller. Now, that would be an enviable situation in wartime, to be instructed to position yourself and your troops out of the path of the flying lead. But Captain Miller, then 27, was not so sure. And as his men were deployed safely along the tree line, he walked up the hill a bit with his second-in-command lieutenant. And the two men stood there watching as a battle developed below. From their safe vantage point, the two bluecoats saw trouble. A Union contingent was about to get its pants kicked, a deadly penetration of a vulnerable northern flank. "This may be worse than it looks," Captain Miller told Lieutenant Brooke. And then the lieutenant reminded his superior that they had been ordered to hold their position. Captain Miller replied, "I know." But he knew something else also, that if he and his squadron did not hurry to the aid of their fellow northerners on the battlefield, the Confederates were going to wipe them out. So Captain Miller turned to his comrade, asking, "When I'm court-martialed, will you testify in my defense?" And Captain Brooks said that he would. And Captain Miller then led his troops in a bloody charge in which a great many of them were killed. But might you guess what happened to Miller as a result? Court-martial? No, sir, he was awarded the United States Congressional Medal of Honor. In this photograph I have of Captain Miller as an old man, that medal and others are pinned to his jacket. For historians generally concur that had the South won the Battle of Gettysburg, they might easily have gone on to win the entire war. And the pivotal battle within that battle involved a spontaneous rescue of Northern troops by an impudent captain named William Miller, the only soldier in American history ever to win the Congressional Medal of Honor for disobeying orders. And now, if you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. We have no paywall. Today I have Keith Gurney, former city council man in San Luis Obispo. He was the, weren't you the creator or the founder of RRM?
No, I came into RRM after it had been founded.
But you were a major player with RRM.
Yes, an early. I worked for them for almost 30 years.
And you have been very involved in development throughout the county.
Planning and urban design.
And he's always watched county government. He's gone to a lot of county meetings and has some strong views about what is going on currently. I also have Michael Aaron Woody. Michael Aaron Woody is running for the District 2 seat. Him and Jim D'Antona are opponents. Keith Gurney is supporting Michael Woody, and Bruce Gibson is supporting Jim D'Antona. I'm going to ask you first, you did some research looking into who Jim D'Antona is. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about Jim D'Antona?
Well, there are a couple of things that I need to give you in terms of background. In my career as a planner and urban designer, I did a lot of work on coastal properties and projects. I actually did the plan for refurbishing the Port of Los Angeles in the two communities of Wilmington and San Pedro. And it looks like Mr. D'Antona has done a lot of work with the Port of Los Angeles. And I also have a lot of experience since having been on the city council from 71 through 77 with the Chamber of Commerce. And both of those issues are really important in taking a look at what Jim D'Antona stands for. He was working for three council members down in Los Angeles.
Yes, as an assistant. As an assistant.
Yes. As an assistant.
Like the legislative assistant, correct?
Well, actually, I believe he was the head person working for Nuri Martinez, who was the council president for the city of Los Angeles.
And that's not like our councils. That's a full-time job. They're, when you're on, Los Angeles is, the county is a fourth of all residents in the country, or in the state of California. Los Angeles City Council is a whole different ballgame.
And she got into trouble, made some statements that required her to resign. She had to resign her residency from the council.
While he was her assistant.
Precisely. So it looks like he's got a lot of experience working with the biggest city in California, which if you look at what's happening with Los Angeles these days, it's a mess. He's bringing a mess with him.
And they claim there's more fraud in L.A. than anywhere else. They're currently, Bill O'Saley, he was the head U.S. attorney out of L.A., and now he's, he had to change his position because he hadn't been approved by the Senate. So he's not the head attorney there, but he is like the, for a while they called him the leader.
Yeah.
But there was a court case. It was kind of funny. But anyway, so Bill O'Saley has repeatedly said there's a ton of fraud in these seven counties, but especially they're going after a number of homeless and housing fraud. And so far, everybody that they've charged has been out of L.A. Everybody.
Well, and the L.A. Times probably has four or five articles a day on the fires of Palisades Park, Pacific Palisades, the fires that wiped out thousands of homes. And the cover-up that has gone into it, really trying to hide what really happened during this. It's quite remarkable to read those articles.
So you're pointing out that, yes, he has experience, but his experience, it's like, would you want the former assistant of Adam Hill running for supervisor?
It's a troubled problem. But what also happened is this whole Chamber of Commerce. When I got elected to the city council, the Chamber of Commerce hated the city of San Luis Obispo. They fought Mission Plaza, which I was there for the opening of Mission Plaza. They fought the tree planting. They fought the signage. They fought all the things that made San Luis Obispo a great Renaissance city back in the early 70s. Now it's a mess. And in the Chamber of Commerce, I can tell you many stories about it, but the Chamber of Commerce, what did they do with the parking rates in the downtown? I mean, the downtown's really suffering right now. Why didn't the Chamber of Commerce fight that? Well, the reason is they're totally dependent on city money over hundreds of thousands of dollars to exist. They don't want to piss off the council members.
And a lot of businesses have stopped working with them because they're too political at this point.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the chamber in a minute, but I want to get back to the allegations of, you know, this corrupt involvement.
Yeah.
So, Michael, what do you think about the fact that he was working in L.A.? What do you think that brings to the table?
I think, you know, like anything, who somebody is a from based on their own experiences. And you're dealing with somebody who was, for example, grew up in Los Angeles, Jim D'Antona. We know that he comes from a family of lobbyists and politicians through his dad's been a lobbyist in California for the last 40 years. And so we know that he brings to this a certain Los Angeles insider's lobbyist perspective to everything. And we can see it in the race that he's putting together right now. The concern that so many of us have is that if you haven't lived in, grew up in, or been around this community and these communities along the coastline from Los Osos up to Ragged Point, you don't understand them. My family does. My family's been here for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, because I'm a Salinan Indian. And the concern that so many of us have with this is that he's bringing this perspective that he has grown up around into our communities out here and does not even understand these communities. You know, the recent one is in the city of Los Osos, as you know, has this severe water problem going on with the seawater intrusion going into the underground aquifers out there. Well, you have your purveyors out there, Los Osos CSD, Golden State, and S&T, going to the County Board of Supervisors and saying, hey, again, let's not have growth out here until we deal with this underwater problem that we're having with our seawater coming in. And the Board of Supervisors, led by Bruce Gibson and Jim D'Antona, have said, no, we're going to open up growth into Los Osos right now. I mean, this is the type of Los Angeles big city mentality. We're going to, you know, the perspective that I'm seeing from Jim D'Antona is that we're going to turn the Central Coast into a big city now. We're going to turn it in with the big industrial ports. We're going to put these big projects out there. We're going to put battery plants on our beaches and coastlines. And it's like, this is just the wrong direction for this entire area. So, yeah, it really does come back to you're not from the area, you don't understand the area, you grew up in a family of lobbyists and politicians, this is what he's going to bring into representing this area. And so, yeah, it's very concerning.
And Mike, what would you say are the primary issues that are occurring? What do you think is most important? If you win the supervisor race,
right,
what do you think are the things that are going to be the big issues to you?
I think the first thing, let's start with an overarching issue of people need a voice. Now, I hate to go back and harp on this, but it goes back to the whole issue of, you know, the FPPC violation with Bruce Gibson. Here we are, a whole bunch of us saying, this is wrong, it's illegal, it breaks the law, it's a financial conflict of interest, and that group of people refuses to listen to us. Nobody listens to the community when we are communities, when we are questioning the wind farm issues that have evolved over the last 10 years and all the problems associated with that. Nobody listened to the community when we said, these battery plants are dangerous. We were laughed at, we were scoffed at. Then we had what happened up in Moss Landing last year. Nobody listens to us when we say we have a water problem in Los Osos. We can't have development out here until we have sustainable water out here. Again, they don't listen. And they say, so if I had to say in one sentence what it is, it's actually listening to people and listening to constituents and allowing the constituents to have a voice into their government and not be tainted by special interests or the arrogance that goes on. We know that these people who have been elected in this region, and go down the list, Laird, Addis, Carbajal, Panetta, Bruce Gibson, on and on, they all take the perspective that they don't go to debates, they don't go to forums, they simply put their name on the ballot and say, I have a statistical advantage here, I'm not going to tell anybody what I'm going to do, and you know what, nobody's going to beat me, because I'm part of the game, so I'll just put my name on the ballot every time, and I'm going to win. I don't need to answer to constituents. That's the problem, right there, plain and simple. That arrogance and that attitude has to stop all throughout this entire county, no matter what you even believe in. I mean, we could have a whole discussion over from the Middle East to any other issue you could talk about, but if we can't have people that understand that they work for the voters, you will never fix or address any of these issues we have going on here.
And I'll give you another one, and that is coastal issues. In my capacity as a planner and an urban designer, I designed Pismo Pier and did a lot of the work on Pismo Beach's waterfront promenade. As the planning director of Morro Bay back in the late 1970s, we did the first Coastal Conservancy-funded comprehensive waterfront improvement program that led to all of those improvements that have been made along Morro Bay's waterfront. And then I also was involved in refurbishing Avila Beach after it was found that it was totally tainted by underground oil. All three of those communities have received national recognition for the beauty of their communities and what has been done to them to really make them sparkle, including Pismo Beach, which was number one on the national list of great communities to small communities on the coast. And we've got Dentona, who wanted to create a whole bunch of bristling windmills, over 300 of them, that are twice as tall as the stacks in the Morro Bay power plant.
Bigger than the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you're going
to... Now, what's going to happen to those communities that are making, that are thriving, if we have all of that stuff installed on our coastline within vision?
And this was done in the back room. And again, there are things. For example, when I love this story, so I'm going to bring it up. When you were one of the designers of the pier, and then the past piers were this T design, yeah. And there was problems because storms would come in and cause a problem. So, and I've talked to both you and who was it went to a bar. They're sitting there talking at a bar about, we got to redesign this. Adam Hill's involved, or not Adam, John King's involved, the city of Pismo's involved, and Was it Dave Watson? Dave Watson, and he's so they're sitting in a bar, and they get a bar napkin, and they dry the triangles and say because of the way this hits, the triangles will make the waves act differently, and they designed this in a bar on a bar napkin.
By using triangles for the various spaces along the pier,
it so created, that's what created the triangle.
It acted as a prow of a ship.
In a bar.
It acted as the prow of a boat instead of a straight.
And it calmed the waters around the beach.
Yeah.
And so this was, what bar were you guys in?
Breda's.
Where was Breda's at?
It's down off Orchid and.
When you first did it. When you guys planned it out.
Oh, that was at the Caboose. That was in the Park Hotel in San Luis Obispo.
So you're sitting in the Caboose, and you have this idea. We need the beachfront where the kids can play in the water. We need to do something so the water doesn't hit hard.
Yeah.
But and when they first did it, people complained that nobody does this. It's not going to work. And now it's common because it.
Oh, the engineers that the city hired when I designed the pier said. This doesn't make any sense.
Hey, easy. I'm an engineer.
Doesn't look like any other pier that we have. And they resisted it. And finally, we convinced them to do it because it was the strongest design that you could have against the wave action.
But now it's common, right?
The engineering company that eventually did it and was originally fighting it put that pier on the cover of their brochure.
I thought it was a really talented engineer like me that created that situation. This is a bunch of guys sitting around a bar doing this?
Yeah.
Well, he was.
And my profession question.
No, he's a professional planner.
This is what he does. Yeah.
And they were. The city wanted something done. John King wanted something done. And they just decided we are going to make this work, and it changed Pismo Beach. We're going to get back. I know I veered off topic for a moment. We're going to get back with more with Keith Gurney and Michael Aaron Woody.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages finishing lower, led by tech, which weighed on the tech-heavy NASDAQ as investors digested the latest economic data that showed that wholesale inflation was cooler than expected in November, while retail sales grew 0.6% during the month. Geopolitical tensions fueled demand for safe haven assets, with the price of gold topping $4,600 a troy ounce and silver surging above $90 for the first time. Shares of Bank of America fell nearly 4%, despite the bank delivering an earnings beat. Citigroup's quarterly results fell, but still topped forecast. Its stock fell over 3%. Credit card cap concerns are still weighing on banks. The Dow winners, Chevron, Johnson & Johnson, and IBM. The Dow decliners, Microsoft, Goldman Sachs, and Amazon. The Dow falling 42 points. The Nasdaq lower by 238. S&P 500 down 37. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm Alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. and the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
Hello from the Groves on 41, where olive oil is our favorite subject.
Yes, and we are seeing an increasing awareness of the health benefits of olive oil, not just for your heart, but your brain and your skin, too. I'm drinking it. Consuming more olive oil is easy with our crazy flavors, like cinnamon, raspberry, rosemary, and more. You could have olive oil for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert.
Schedule a tasting and tour at the Groves on 41, or visit us at a farmer's market Saturday mornings in Templeton, Tuesday mornings in Paso, and want to learn more? Go to thegrovesonforty1.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today I have Keith Gurney. He has been a well-known planner in the community for decades in the county. We were just talking about how he worked on the Pismo Pier. I also have Michael Aaron Woody. He's running for District 2. And you were saying before you got off, we were talking a little bit about how these communities have really... You built up Pismo. We have a lot of great little communities here.
Absolutely. But and it's taken them years to get that way.
But then you have on the other side the people that are wanting to industrialize Morro Bay and Port San Luis. Do you think that have a... What impact do you think that would have on the communities?
Oh, a huge impact. I mean, having done the Port of Los Angeles... Renaissance plan, as it were. That's the largest port in the Western Hemisphere. All over the Western Hemisphere is Port of Los Angeles. Next door is the Port of Long Beach, which in today's LA Times is going to be expanding by double on their port container operations. Industrial ports are brutal. And we had to essentially reclaim the waterfront that these communities were blocked from in San Pedro and Wilmington. They had no access to their waterfront. It was all industrial. And now it's just a remarkable renaissance for that area. That having been said, I can't imagine a huge... waterfront landfill that they were talking about putting out there in Port San Luis, similar to what the Port of Los Angeles did. They put a 450-acre island out in the middle of blue water Pacific Ocean. And
this was going to be different. This was going to be a floating giant mass of metal.
Yeah, well, whatever. What's important to know is that industrialization of our waterfront, whether it's wind farms or whatever, is going to destroy the economic viability of these communities that have worked so hard to become nationally recognized beautiful places.
And it's really interesting because in order to understand the magnitude of this, because there are people out there, I mean, like with any issue that, you know, to see things a little differently, I would tell people this, is that you have to look at this from a long-term visionary standpoint. When you allow a project such as this to go in, let's say these wind farms, which represent, I think it's about 600 of these, 1,100 feet tall, all twice as tall as Morro Rock itself. When you allow something like this to go on, this is not a one-off project. You always have to remember, you've now set a precedent. So now when you have that high industrialized port in that one location, it's not the port is there, we all move on with life. It's the port is there, the next generation comes in, or the next council meeting, or the next Board of Supervisors meeting comes in, and they say, hey, we have this project. It's a five-story hotel. We have this project. It's this other industrialized port. Hey, we have this group of people. Instead of bringing everything up through Los Angeles or those ports in there, we're going to ship them in from China. If we just simply do another expansion here, we could put it over here, because we've already have this over here. We've already set precedent for our land use there. Now we can bring this in too. This sets up a long-term generational domino effect that will evolve this area into someplace that's much more resembles San Francisco, Los Angeles, or those types of ports down there. That's not what this place should be. And I plead with people, study history. Understand the history of land use. Understand that when you allow one project to go in, it sets precedence, and even sometimes legal precedence, for future projects just like that. There's never a one-off when it comes to development like this.
And we have, look at Avila. Avila was a mess. Avila used to have a lot of port, used as more of a port, and then it became a fishing. And they cleaned it up. They cleaned up the oil. They cleaned up everything. And it's a beautiful area now. It would be very different if you have an industrial port there. It will not be the same. Plus, you get oil in the water.
I can tell you right now, I've already talked to a lot of people who live out there. And my district doesn't even go down to Avila, but I know a lot of people who live out there in Avila. And they've all said, if this county and this region is going to go towards doing that, people are talking about selling their homes and moving that's not why. And some people would say, oh, you're being dramatic. No, I'm going to tell you something. If I had a home down there and this got approved and that's where this was going.
And those are expensive homes.
Yes, I would end up looking at selling my home. And if I was potentially buying a home in this region and somebody came in and said, well, this is going to be an industrial port in the next 5, 10, 15 years, I would do a second look and say, well, let's not move here. Let's move somewhere else. This is going to have devastating consequences to this entire region. And the people who continue to support these types of projects, they're short-sighted. They don't understand, nor have they ever studied history or economies of areas.
Well, given all of this, I think Dantona is going to be bringing Los Angeles to San Luis Obispo, and including all of the mess that will be coming.
And let's be clear. I mean, these are issues that this isn't trying to put words into somebody's mouth. This is what his own words, his own columns, his own statements. This is what he wants to do.
Well, speaking of that, what was really interesting is when Gibson announced that he wanted to bring him into his staff before the end of the year, he indicated, he made these quotes. It's obvious that he has a job to do and a campaign to run, and those two things are completely separated. He cannot campaign on county time. He's not campaigning on county time. He's doing his job. And it's remarkable that Gibson was able to get the board to go along with paying him out of county taxpayer funds to run for a position that he doesn't have right now. It's just remarkable. And then it says, here it says that he's being completely separate, but at the same time, Woody's accusations in this same article that announced his campaign was being very critical. It was a campaign statement by Dantona against Michael.
And what got me about that so much, and Karen, you and I had a talk about this, is that when I first put out my comments about this, I kept my comments like you know, it's like we talked about. I kept my comments directed towards the appointment of Bruce Gibson's wife, Sherry. I kept it directed at that. I knew of the potential of Jim Dantona being appointed, but I was very focused. I said, let's stick to the issues. Here's what we know factually. This is what's going on. This is illegal. This is against the law. You cannot do this. It was Jim Dantona that jumped in after the fact, and I never brought him up. It was Jim Dantona that jumped in after the fact and came after me and started making these accusations. He's not fit for office. He doesn't know what he's talking about. This demonstrates he shouldn't be running. And I'm thinking to myself, and I picked this up. no joke. I literally picked this up in the morning, and I start snickering to myself and thinking, wow, so Bruce Gibson is already yanking your chain already. And then that's why I made my comments about Jim. I said, well, if this is what he's going to say about me, then let's call it the way it is. Jim D'Antona is morally bankrupt.
And Gibson was
Gibson did not know what he was doing, lying or whatever it was. Jim D'Antona's coming after me and all this. And when all was said and done, and I keep harping on this, and I don't mean to sound petty about it, but, you know, neither one of them have ever called me privately and said, hey, listen, this thing kind of spun a little sideways. Can we do a little reset here? Sorry we went after you on this. We got kind of caught sideways on this, which is the proper thing to you do in politics when you're running against somebody. Even if it's a tough campaign, you learn to call people privately and say, hey, listen, this one got a little out of hand. Sorry about that. Let's see if we can move on from that. No, never even apologize for it.
And the issue with me is I think, you need to work to show there is no conflict of interest. You don't even want to perceive. It's not always a legal conflict.
It's a perception.
Yeah, and a lot of people will say, I'm not going to do this because it's a perceived conflict of interest.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is the opposite. They're just doing it their way.
Yeah, and that's another issue when it comes to conflict of interest, and you're exactly right on that, Karen, is that there's more to conflict of interest besides, you know, towing a legal line and having an attorney walk in the room and say, technically it's this or technically it's that. It's about demonstrating public confidence to people. If you're going to lead people, you have to lead by example. Like it or not, when you're elected to office, Keith, you know this one very clearly. When you're elected to office, you live with a different set of expectations and a different set of standards. You have to. That's how you lead. You have to be at that level. You have to do it differently. And to do it anything less shows that you misunderstand what this job is all about.
Yeah, it is. I just want to get back to, again, where you're not hiring your girlfriends. They don't have husband and wives working together in different departments.
Or moving around your girlfriend behind your wife's back from one department to another, so that way you can go to quote business trips.
there has to be transparency. And I will tell you, one of the worst, this is my personal pet peeve. In the old days, I could just call and ask somebody a question. I could call the secretary and say, what are the water levels at this place right now?
Sure.
And she'd give them to me. Now, I'm not allowed to tell you that. You've got to go through our PIO. I think the county has, 26 PIOs? They're probably paying, several million a year to have people not tell you the information.
It's public information.
They don't give it to you. I'm constantly told, if I call and say, I'm Karen Vili from Cal Coast News, I'm not allowed to talk to you. If I call in and don't say who I am and say, can you tell me what this is? Oh, yes. But as soon as I'm, say, a reporter, they want me to get the spin. And I think we got to get back to transparency. And I think the first thing should be get rid of police departments need PIOs.
Yes.
Let me explain why. They're not allowed to say certain things. Most things are public. And there's very few things that aren't. It doesn't take a PIO to know those things in most departments. Police departments with active investigations, it's much tougher.
Let me give you an idea. It's interesting you bring up that PIO thing. One of the things that we have to fill out in office is a Form 700, I think it's called, the Form 700, yes. Conflict of Interest form.
Yep.
Now, what's interesting about the Form 700 is that it's a real basic form. You're declaring all your assets, where you get your money from, and all kinds of little nuanced things like that, your investments, etc. Okay, no big deal. It's all public records, so people can look it up. Now, here's the interesting thing. With the county of San Luis Obispo, in order to get a copy of one of those, you got to go through this dog and pony show to get a copy of this. The reality is that what the county should be doing is taking all these Form 700s for not just the elected officials, but also for the government employees that are there that also have to fill these out, and just put them on the website and line them up in alphabetical order and make it real simple for everybody to pull these up.
Most of the cities do.
I can go
to the cities, and I do get them from the county usually when I ask. There is a huge difference. So some clerks are very good about the clerk recorder. Everybody thinks they're just about election. That's a small part of their job.
Yes.
They are about a lot more than that. And it has to do with documents and planning records. that's where you go to the clerk or file documents.
Yeah.
And it's a problem when there's no transparency, and they're really trying to, they don't want the public to know how they're operating.
No, you should, and that's the thing, is that these documents, and these are basic documents, Form 700, these documents should be readily available to people. Literally pick up your phone, click a few buttons, and it pops up on your screen. It should be that available to people. And that's basic stuff there.
Do you know that I had asked for the, I'll bring this back and we'll talk about a little story about how those forms are important.
Propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online deltaliquidenergy.com.
We asked Nick Medeiros, CPA in Atascadero, what's new as we prepare our taxes?
We've got some big upcoming changes courtesy of the Big Beautiful Bill that was signed back in the summer. How it's going to impact folks and answering questions on that, because it was passed so fast. There's going to be some things that people like and maybe some things folks don't like. They did address some key issues that were the fallout of the previous, call it Trump bill, back in 2017. So they did address one big issue, which was the SALT limitation. That's been increased, so that's going to help some folks coming up here. And I know the president touted three key factors he wanted to do with no tax on tips, overtime, Social Security. They got two of those, subject to income limits, because there's always income limits and phase outs on things. And there was a kind of a compromise on Social Security. So those are going to be probably the major points in that bill that affect a lot of people.
Nick Medeiros, CPA, 805-466-7249.
Nothing says comfort like genuine sheepskin slippers and boots, and Tack and Shoes has a great selection. Brands like Emu Australia, Super Lamb, Bear Paw, and more. Soft, cozy, and perfect for chilly days. Tackens also has a great selection of work boots and casual shoes. So visit Tack and Shoes today at 8th and Spring in Paso, 668 Marsh in San Luis, or shop anytime at 805boots.com. Tack and Shoes, family owned and operated since 1937.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. And one of the things I was saying was, back years ago, I had a dumpster diver that was going through John Belcher and Ryan Wright's trash, and there was evidence they were paying Adam Hill bribes in the trash. So I wanted to get Adam Hill's 700 form, and I asked for some things, and they gave me an inadequate, they didn't send me what I'd actually asked for. So I just went in one afternoon, and I asked the lady, I said, can I see the file on this for everybody? She laid it in front of me, and inside that it showed where he created that slow, where he said he was making $10,000 to $100,000 a year through slow consulting. That was the LLC created by John Belcher in John Belcher's name, and then given to Adam Hill to put the money they were giving him into. Again, they laid it out in the trash. You have no idea. Government agencies, half of them don't shred. Half the attorneys around don't shred. The evidence that really put Kelly Gearhart into prison was found in his attorney's trash. I had a dumpster diver going through the attorney's trash. One night he threw out about 10 boxes of documents when the state started looking into allegations. And they had contracts, inked contracts. There was massive stuff. I wrote a story, and I received a call from the feds, and they go, you wrote a story. Do you really have a copy of this contract? I said, no, I have the original ink. Well, how?
because I got to go with my friends and got some pizza, and we went dumpster diving.
but what I'm saying is if government was more transparent, and most is, the county is kind of an oddball that you have to ask for these things.
Yeah, the county, that's where, you know, it's one thing to follow the letter of the law, and we see this in government agencies and whatnot. Now, this is where I'm going to step in and say it all starts at the top. It starts with your elected officials. If you would have elected officials that actually played by the rules and did not create this level of what I call pressure on these executive government officials, you know, that are not elected officials, but just right below it, you could start putting a little bit of an end to all of this. But what you have is you have these people getting elected to office thinking, I'm going to do whatever I want. And basically, these people right below me, basically, if they don't do what I want, then I'm just going to keep firing people until I get what I want. So the government bureaucrats end up just kind of acquiescing to everything just so they can keep their job. And you got a lot of good government employees down there. And I think, Karen, you know some of them, too, that they're caught, and they're just in a bad situation where if they don't do what they're told, they're going to be out of a job next week.
And there is an ongoing criminal investigation. When the feds arrested Ryan Petetit, they literally wrote, this case is over for this defendant only. They have been downloading thousands of pages of documents, and I did retrieve 800 of them, and I'll tell you how. What happened is they file them under seal. And I saw some that said filed under seal, but they were there. So I was like, ooh, it was about 800 pages. And I downloaded it. And that was a Friday at about 4. And first thing Monday morning, they put them under seal. But guess what? I already have them. And they were literally saying, this guy did this illegally. Actually, the document I gave the state bar showing regarding the alleged payment for that he used the money for his daughter's home on Belcher, that was in the under seal documents that weren't under seal the first 3 days.
Wow.
But we're bringing up one more thing. One of the other things that's come up in a lot of these elections, it came up heavily in the election between Lynn Compton and Jimmy Paulding. The first time they ran against each other, Jimmy Paulding was saying Lynn's going to be doing, you know, is going to approve fracking off our shores, and we're going to have fracking off the, you know, off the coast of San Luis Obispo. Well, first, they don't do fracking. It has to be over 10,000 feet deep. They could do oil drilling, but none of
and you're talking in the ocean.
In the ocean. Yeah. That you don't have to do, there's no fracking if you have, it has to do with the depth of the oil, and we have no, most of the, for example, the oil wells in Santa Maria are 800 feet deep. There's a possibility in the hills going into Kern County there may be, but that's not where our shale deposits. It's fracking is to get oil out of shale deposits that are of a depth of over 10,000 feet. But they passed citizens voted to have no allowable infrastructure for offshore oil. It's up to Trump. Trump wants to put offshore oil, and they're moving forward in Santa Barbara County. But it has come out, they always say, the Republicans will put in offshore oil, but you have to have infrastructure, and nobody's going to build a platform. There's already three approvals off our coastline. They don't do them because they can't get infrastructure.
Well, and on top of it, I mean, for the federal government to approve it, it would go into federal waters, which is 3 miles out. Three to 12 miles is your federal waters at that point. And the state of California has pretty much said that, okay, even if you did something out there, we're not going to let you go through the state waters, which is 0 to 3 miles. So you can't even get the pipes to run through here, and the state would pretty much shut that down. So it leaves this weird situation where, okay, even if you put something out there in federal waters, the state has pretty much said it would already shut everything down as is. So I'm not really clear when people make these claims that, you know, Lynn Compton is going to allow this in or allow that in. I don't see how you would even do something like that in California.
Well, with the anti-Trump Democrats advocating the it's like the wind turbines for oil as opposed to offshore oil drilling. Given the situation you just talked about, Trump ought to be real happy by saying, hey, let's forget about oil drilling off California's coast. Might get some votes out of California, believe it or not.
Well, the courts just approved. So there was oil drilling off of off the coast of Santa Barbara. There were three different platforms. The company that owned them was responsible for that spill into the water. It was a pipeline. It was a section of the pipeline that had corroded. Mm-hmm. So all of them shut down. And then they were allowed, another company bought it, and they are now, the environmental groups tried to stop it, but the court has said they can do it. And now the Coastal Commission's trying to stop it, but they've already got, the judges have already repeatedly said they can do it. And they just want another court case. It looks like they're going to have the oil drilling off of Santa Barbara. They started one in December, and they were going to start the other two in January or February. And then this group tried to stop them, and a judge quickly ruled you can't. So I do believe they're restarting oil drilling in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, in Santa Barbara, yeah. And forgive me, my comments had to do with new applications in San Luis Obispo, if there weren't any.
We have three approvals already. There's approvals in southern San Luis Obispo County, but they can't do it because there's a citizens voted for. We have a law in the county that you can't have infrastructure for oil. So even those that have been approved have never been able to move forward because they can't move forward without infrastructure.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty much why Phillips is kind of dried up.
Yes. Yeah, so that was also, they wanted, that wasn't even offshore oil, but they didn't want a lot of the oil refineries. And now it's a problem. Oil companies are leaving California like mad, and they believe there could be an upcoming shortage of oil because we have a different demand for oil, and the refineries, they say they can't, it doesn't pencil out. They lose money working in California.
Yep.
And of course, the irony of the whole thing is that you have people coming forward saying, we're going to electrify the entire state of California. Now, that's Jim D'Antonis, by the way, exact quote on another radio show as well. We want to electrify our entire state and get rid of all forms of energy except electricity. And it's like, this is just absolutely the craziest thing I've ever heard.
How much more time do we have?
2 minutes.
Okay. One of the things that I think voters should really take a look at, and you as a reporter ought to take a look at, is really what has happened with the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. Because this has happened, a lot of this has happened under Jim D'Antonis' leadership as the head of the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce, some time ago, probably about 10 years ago, started a leadership group and tried to promote people to run for office. And the city councils of San Luis Obispo have just gone off the rails in terms of doing things that are really against what the community used to be. The construction of roads, the construction of bike paths that are constraining a lot of the roads that are part of the problem that went into the Palisades fires. There's a lot to look at.
Well, you have about a minute to ask Keith Gurney or Michael a question.
Hi. Okay. I'm not asking a question. I'm just commenting on the comment that was made that the Form 700 on the FPPC website.
Not the county website. The county website. We were talking about the county website.
Okay. So you're not talking about the one that's filed with the California?
It's filed with California, but most government bodies in the state, like the city of Pismo or Paso, have those online. The county does not.
podcast.
Well, I want to thank you both for being here. Sorry, that was the end of the show.
Oh.
But thank you, Keith.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Sure. Thank you.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.